girls. I can't believe that dog ran away. You think she's going to find him? I think he'll come back because he loves her. Okay, here's the next chapter. I searched those woods till it was almost dark. I called Wishbone's name till my throat hurt. I walked up and down the side of the road till my legs ached. Finally, I went to Howard's to get Lenny's bike that I left in the yard that afternoon. I could hear the Odoms inside eating supper, everybody laughing and saying, "Pass the butter," and stuff. I pictured them in their crowded kitchen, the boys poking each other and grabbing for the last biscuit, Mrs. Odom cooking up more fried chicken and kissing the tops of their heads, Mr. Odom's eyes twinkling as he watched his happy family. I wondered if Howard had told them what I said about his wish, and if he did, what did all those good-hearted Odoms think of me now? When I got home, I went straight back to my room and held the biggest pity party of my life. I laid on Wishbone's pillow on the floor beside the bed, breathing in his doggy smell, and I cried until I fell asleep. I woke up to Bertha whispering my name. The room was dark except for the faint glow of the lamp in the living room floating through the half-open door of my room. I closed my eyes real quick and pretended like I was still asleep. I couldn't stand the thought of telling Bertha about my day, how Wishbone didn't want to be my dog anymore, and how he'd run off, and how I'd said such a mean thing to Howard. I thought maybe Bertha would leave, but she didn't. She gave me a little shake and whispered my name again. "Come get some supper," she said. "I'm not hungry," I mumbled into the pillow. "Your favorite," she said, "grits and cheese and bacon." I shook my head. I felt like a pouty baby. I even had the urge to suck my thumb. When I acted like this back in Raleigh, Mama would say, "Quit that baby whining before I jerk a knot in you." But Bertha said, "You know, sometimes when you've had a bad day, eating grits makes you feel better." She poked me with an elbow. "I know that from experience," she added. I sat up and hugged my knees. I leaned a little closer to Bertha until we were touching, arm to arm, knee to knee. She smelled like someone who spent the day in the kitchen, bacon and coffee and cinnamon. But she looked like someone had spent the day outdoors, arms tan and leathery, dirt under her fingernails. "Wishbone's gone," I whispered. She nodded and pushed a strand of wispy hair behind her ears. "Gus is out there looking for him," she said. "And Gus is a man you can count on." A teeny tiny glimmer of feel better worked its way into my heart. I knew she was right about that. Gus did seem like a man you could count on, but what if Wishbone wants to be a stray again, I said. Bertha sat up straight and took my chin in her hand. "Charlie Reese," she said, "you think that dog don't know a good thing when he sees one?" "What good thing?" I said in my pouty baby voice. She held up a finger each time she counted off. 1, he eats bologna for breakfast. 2, he sleeps on a pillow. And 3, he is loved by an angel. Angel? Ha! So, here's where I had to go and ruin the image of me as an angel. "I said something mean to Howard," I muttered. Silence. Why had I gone and told her that? I wish I could take those words back, gather them up like butterflies in a net, and stay an angel in her eyes. And then I got this bad thought. What if Bertha was wrong about dogs loving you no matter what? What if Wishbone knows I'm mean and that's why he ran off? I could feel Bertha's warm skin against mine, hear her soft breathing in the stillness of the little room. Finally, she slapped a hand on my knee and said, "You need some grits." As soon as I woke up the next day, I looked down at the pillow on the floor, and more than anything, I wanted Wishbone to be there. He wasn't. I hurried into the kitchen. Bertha was shelling peas at the table. "Where's Gus?" I asked. "He went to work." I sank into the chair across from her. "I guess he didn't find Wishbone," I said. She looked at me all sad eyes and shook her head. "No, he didn't. But he said to tell you we can get out there and look when he gets home. He set up that trap of yours last night, and I put some scraps in it, so we can keep an eye on that. And don't forget, Wishbone has a tag on his collar. I'm sure somebody will call us when they find him." She pushed a box of cereal toward me. "Eat some breakfast." But how could I eat with my stomach all balled up like it was? And then there was my other problem, Howard. What was I going to do about Howard? Guilt was gnawing at my insides as I watched Bertha shelling those peas. Every now and then she glanced up at me, and when she did, I had to look away real quick. There she was, over there on the other side of the table, thinking I was an angel. And here I was, on my side, feeling about as far from an angel as anybody could be. "Aren't you going to ask me what mean thing I said to Howard?" I asked her. She shook her head. "No, I'm not." "How come?" She tossed a handful of peas into the bowl and leaned toward me. "Charlie," she said, "you can't judge people for the mistakes they make. You judge them for how they fix those mistakes." She reached across the table and patted my hand. "Besides, you think I haven't ever said a mean word or two I wanted to snatch back? Just ask Gus if you don't believe me." It was for sure Bertha had said a lot of words in her life, seeing as how she was such a talker, but I was pretty sure none of those words were ever mean like mine. Mean and Bertha did not go together. "Now why don't you get dressed and we'll figure out what to do about Wishbone," she said. But before I could even think about how to start this sorry day, someone knocked on the front screen door. And imagine my surprise when I saw who it was. Howard. I stood there barefoot in my pajamas with my hair a big rat's nest and searched for something to say. But then Bertha jumped right in and said, "Well, looky here, who showed up at our doorstep, Charlie?" She held the door open. "Howard Odom, in need of some cinnamon toast, I bet," she said. "Or cereal, or eggs, or grits. You need some grits, Howard." He stepped inside and shook his head. "No, ma'am." Then he turned to me and said, "Want to pick wild strawberries?" He held up an empty milk carton with the top cut off. "I know where there's tons." I pushed hair out of my eyes. "Y'all go on and pick strawberries," Bertha said. "I'll keep an eye out on things here." She nodded in the direction of the trap at the edge of the yard. And then I collapsed into a puddle of sorrow on the couch and told Howard about Wishbone running off. When I finished, all I wanted to do was flop down and cry. But Howard said, "What are you sitting here for? Let's go find him." Then the next thing I knew, he was out the door and grabbing his bike, leaving me to run to my room and get dressed and scramble after him. Me and Howard rode our bikes up and down that mountain road all morning long. We tromped through woods and pushed our way around thick shrubs and stepped over sticker bushes. We went back to the creek behind Howard's house 3 times, calling and whistling. We peered under porches and opened sheds and circled barns. By lunchtime, the blazing summer sun overhead left pockets of melted asphalt in the road and trickles of sweat down our backs. We didn't talk much, and that was fine by me. I'd gone over and over in my head how I would say I'm sorry to Howard for what I'd said about his wish. But whenever I thought the time was right, my mouth went dry and my throat squeezed up, and the words I'd planned to say stayed bottled up inside. We went back to Gus and Bertha's a few times to check the trap, but the table scraps were still in the pie tin. We had lunch on Howard's front porch, sitting on the couch eating Vienna sausage and cold pork and beans off of a paper plate on our laps. Dwight and Cotton were out in the yard throwing rocks at the mailbox. They hit the metal with a loud thwang and left little dents on the sides. Mrs. Odom came out and told them to stop, and then she sat on the couch and told me not to worry. She was sure Wishbone would come back. "You've got to think positive," she said. "Yes, ma'am," I mumbled. Did she know I'd said that mean thing to Howard? If she knew, I bet she wouldn't want me on her team anymore. That afternoon, Burl drove us into town to search parking lots and dumpsters. Dwight and Lenny made some lost dog signs, and he nailed them to a telephone pole and a fence post. It was almost supper time when me and Howard rode our bikes back to Gus and Bertha's and checked the trap one more time. And then we sat in the lawn chairs out in the garden and watched dragonflies flit over the tops of the marigolds. In my head, I said, "Howard, I'm sorry I said that about your wish. You know, about your up-down walk." Then I'd say, "Shoot, nobody even cares about your up-down walk." But then he'd know that was a big fat lie, 'cause he saw those kids leaving him out of kickball games and cutting in line in front of him like he was invisible. So I sat there in silence with my thoughts spinning in my head. Maybe he didn't care about what I said. I mean, he was still being nice to me. He was helping me look for Wishbone. "You sure do look forlorn," Howard said. I didn't know one other kid in the whole world who would use the word forlorn, but that was the perfect word to describe me, forlorn. Just before supper, Jackie called and told me she went to see Scrappy in jail and he got a tattoo. "Don't you even want to know what it is?" she asked when I didn't say anything. Sure. "A bird," she said. "A black bird in a cage, right on the back of his hand. Can you believe that?" "I guess." Then she rambled on about how graduating from high school wasn't all it's cracked up to be, and how much she hated her job at the Waffle House. "People leave the tables all nasty with syrup," she said, "and they plop their crying babies in a high chair and expect me to bring them their blueberry waffles in like a minute." She told me that her boyfriend Arlo wrecked his car and turned out to be a loser, and Carol Lee saw him at the mall with Darla Jacobs, she said. "So I told him, adios, sucker." And then, "Ain't you going to ask me about Wishbone?" I said. "What?" I'd been telling her all about Wishbone when she called, how smart he was and how he learned to sit and stay and how he slept beside my bed. "Wishbone," I said, "my dog, aren't you even going to ask me about him?" Sure. "How is Wishbone?" "Gone," I hollered. "He's gone." And then I spewed out the whole sorry story about how he'd run off and how I'd looked everywhere. But I figured he'd rather be a stray than live with me. I tried to stop, but I couldn't. I moved on to how he didn't want me the same as nobody else wanted me, and how I'd hoped she was enjoying her perfect life while I was stuck here in Colby with a bunch of squirrel-eating hillbillies. And then I hung up and sat on the floor with my back against the wall. I could see Bertha in the kitchen, stirring something on the stove and pretending like she hadn't heard me. When the phone rang again, I just looked at it there in my hand. Bertha stopped stirring. "Ring, ring, ring." "Hello," I said in a terrible, trembly voice. "Charlie." Jackie's voice floated through the telephone line, soft and sure. "From Raleigh to Colby." I pictured that voice traveling from Carol Lee's fancy brick house, along highways and over treetops, and then up the winding roads and down the gravel driveway into the little house perched on the side of the mountain, and finally getting to me, sitting on the floor and needing to hear it. "I'm sorry about Wishbone," Jackie said. "I really am. I hope he comes back." I watched a fly dart from the window screen to the lamp to the ceiling. "Charlie," Jackie said.
"What?"
"I know the whole situation has been hard on you."
"Situation? Is that what it was? A situation?"
"I think Mama's getting better," Jackie said. "I talked to her yesterday and she sounded better."
What did that mean? That she got out of bed? That she got on her feet on the ground? And that she cared one little bit about me? That I'd go back to Raleigh and our broken family would suddenly disappear and in its place would be a real family holding hands and saying their blessings?
"Maybe I can visit you soon," Jackie went on. "I'm going to get my driver's license in a couple of weeks."
"Did I tell you that?
And Carol Lee got a car for graduation. Can you believe that? If I get some time off from my godforsaken job, I could come to Colby. We could go to Asheville and hang out. They have vegan restaurants there. Did you know that? I'm thinking about becoming vegan, and I bet if I..."
She jabbered on about all the things she could do, but she left out the part about how she would go back to her perfect life and I would still be here without my dog and wishing I hadn't been mean to Howard. That night, when Gus got home, the three of us drove around looking for Wishbone. We went down to the school and over to the diner. We drove through trailer parks and up alleys. While we drove, Bertha told us a story she'd read in the newspaper about a dog that fell out of the back of a van in North Carolina and managed to find his way back home to Indiana. "Almost 400 miles," she said. "The family had been on vacation over in Maggie Valley. I can't hardly believe that." Gus was quiet, shifting a toothpick from one side of his mouth to the other while he scanned the roadside and the parking lots in the woods as he drove. Every now and then he said, "Don't worry, Butterbean, we'll find him." But I was thinking that maybe now was the time to change my wish. Maybe next time I got a chance, I should wish my dog would come back. Finally, it got too dark to see much anymore, so we headed home. We turned into the driveway, and that old car bounced and squeaked over the holes. The crunch of tires on gravel echoed in the still evening air. The headlights sent beams of light dancing through the mountain laurel and chokeberries beside the driveway. Finally, the house came into view, and I thought my heart was going to leap right out of me at what I saw. There was Wishbone, wagging his tail as he trotted toward us, dragging his leash on the ground behind him. "Well, that's all for tonight. I knew that dog would come home. He loves that girl. And I love you girls. Bye."